Hello and welcome to another live edition of The Face of Pro-Life. Today I'm speaking with Darlene Wagner, I'm sorry, our executive producer. Thank you so much for joining us today, Darlene. You've brought us some very interesting information from lifenews.com, and what they've done has compiled basically all of the actions that President Obama has taken since he was elected. So even before he was inaugurated, there's 11 pages of different things that he's done. And I'd like to go through just the very first things that he did and the more recent things that he's done. So just since he was elected, this is pre-inauguration, in November 5th of 2008, he selects pro-abortionist Representative Rahm Emanuel as his White House chief of staff, and Representative Emanuel had a 0% pro-life voting record, according to the National Right to Life, when he was in the House of Representatives. On November 19th, a couple weeks after that, he picks pro-abortion former Senator Tom Daschle as his Health and Human Services Secretary, and Daschle has a long pro-abortion voting record, according to the National Right to Life. A day later, he chooses former NARAL, and that's the National Abortion Rights Action League, their legal director, Dawn Johnson, to serve as a member of his Department of Justice review team. Later, he finalizes her appointment as the Assistant Attorney General for the Office of the Legal Counsel in the Obama administration. 4 days later, he appoints Ellen Moran, the former director of the pro-abortion group Emily's List, and that's basically a group that basically funds candidates that are all pro-abortion, and he made her his White House communications director. The same day, he puts former Emily's List board member Melody Barnes in place as his director of the Domestic Policy Council. November 30th, so that's 6 days later, he named pro-abortion Senator Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, and we know that she has an unblemished pro-abortion voting record and supported making unlimited abortion as an international right. So you can see where her leanings would be toward as far as any kind of international policies towards abortion and choice. On December 10th, he selects pro-abortion former Clinton administration official Jean Lambrou to become the deputy director of the White House Office of Health Reform. Planned Parenthood is excited about this selection. On the same day, his transition team publishes a memo from dozens of pro-abortion groups listing their laundry list of pro-abortion actions they want him to take. Now, this is all before he even takes office. He then picks pro-abortion Virginia Governor Tim Kaine as his chairman of the Democratic Party. He chooses Thomas Pirelli, the lawyer who represented Terry Schiavo's husband, Michael, in his efforts to kill his disabled wife, as the third highest attorney in the Justice Department. And on January 22nd, he releases a statement reinstating support for Roe versus Wade, because that would be the anniversary of that decision that allowed virtually unlimited abortions and has resulted in at least 50 million abortions since 1973. The day after, he forces taxpayers to fund pro-abortion groups that either promote or perform abortion in other nations. This is the overturning of the Mexico City policy that most of the Republican presidents had upheld, and of course, all of the Democratic presidents overturn every time they get in. 3 days later, he nominates Deputy Secretary of State James Steinberg, tells members of the Senate that taxpayers should be forced to fund abortions. The nominee erroneously says limits on abortion funding are unconstitutional. Really? January 29th, President Obama nominates pro-abortion David Ogden as Deputy Attorney General. The Vatican has rejected three Obama ambassador nominees because of their position in favor of abortion. So you can see how callous he is towards Catholics. On April 7th, Obama has named pro-abortion law professor Harold Hong-Gu Kong as the top lawyer for the State Department, put more abortion advocates on his White House Advisory Council for faith-based issues. On February 12th, he nominates pro-abortion Elena Kagan to serve as Solicitor General, who then he later nominates as his Supreme Court nominee. On February 27th, He starts the process of overturning pro-life conscience protections that President Bush put in place to make sure that medical staff and centers are not forced to do abortions. By February 28th, he nominates pro-abortion Kathleen Sebelius to become Secretary of Health and Human Services, and we know how well that's worked out. And the Obama administration shut out pro-life groups from attending a White House-sponsored healthcare summit. Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion business, made the invitation list, as did other pro-abortion groups. Okay, so that was just within the first 2 months of him becoming president. More recently, again, these are the pages that I'm going to skip over because we only have an hour-long show, and the election might be by the time we get there. December 6th of 2011, last year, Republicans were forced to stop Obama pro-abortion judge Caitlin Halligan. On the 12th, the Obama administration blocked Texas's attempt to defund Planned Parenthood. Basically, they defunded all of women's health programs in Texas because Texas wanted to stop funding Planned Parenthood with taxpayers' money. On December 12th, he hires a former Planned Parenthood abortion business official to run his campaign in North Carolina. On the 18th, he appoints a former Planned Parenthood board member to a position as a federal appeals court judge. On the 23rd, Obama administration sends more tax dollars to embryonic stem cell research. Very sad. On January 13th, he forces taxpayers to fund more embryonic stem cell research, so within 3 weeks. On the 17th, a judge stops the Obama administration from trying to silence a pro-life activist. I know of at least three pro-life activists who have been gone after by the Eric Holder and the Justice Department while they sit back on all of the guys that were intimidating the voters and the Black Panthers. On the 22nd, that is the anniversary of Roe versus Wade, he celebrates the decision allowing 54 million abortions. On the same day, he puts in place a new mandate forcing religious employers to pay for birth control and drugs that may cause abortion. So this is the new HHS mandate that's been talked about a lot in the news. It's interesting that he does it, you know, on the anniversary of Roe versus Wade. On the 27th, the First Lady lunches with the Planned Parenthood CEO. On the 30th of January, a judge stops the Obama administration from silencing another pro-life activist. On January 31st, appoints a pro-abortion lawyer who helped craft Roe versus Wade to federal appeals court. On February 7th, the Obama administration silenced Catholic Army chaplains from reading a letter that criticized the Obama administration on its new mandate that forces religious employees to pay for coverage for employees that include birth control and drugs that cause abortions. And on February 10th, Obama revises the birth control mandate to require insurance companies to provide it along with free drugs that may cause abortions. So a lot of times people might think, well, you know, a president really doesn't make that big a difference when it comes to life issues. But as you can see, just by the limited things that I've read, he really can affect policy that would be destructive to life.
He made a U-turn. As we were going one direction, he totally made a U-turn and going in the opposite direction of what all the previous administrations, and even I think the Clinton administration was not that bold.
Right, right. I mean, it's
devastating. As you look at it in terms of policies and how they affect the very inner structure of our system.
I mean, he's not just appointing people who are pro choice to a lot of his, the judgeships or his inner circle. I mean, he's actually taking people from Planned Parenthood who are not pro-choice, they're pro-abortion, and putting them in very, you know, coveted spots.
Well, if you
with a lot of power.
If you called somebody a social conservative, meaning that they were pro-life, then you would be calling the type of people that he appoints as being liberal with the concept that they're so pro-abortion that they're that's their culture.
Yeah,
they're socially pro-abortion, and that he's appointing them for that very reason. He's not appointing them, as you see their credential. They're not credentialed people.
Right, right.
It's almost because they are pro-choice. that they're being appointed. He's giving payback to them because they supported him. Now it was payback. Plus, they're going to implement his policies, mm-hmm. which you can see is, it to me, it's sweeping. It's as though, as you read the 11 pages, it is though he put in place every single method that he could disembowel mm-hmm. any pro-life activities in our entire governmental system.
Right. I mean, yeah. President Bush had, you know, painstakingly took the time to look into the human embryonic stem cell research. I mean, he really did want, he does want mm-hmm. to promote, you know, research that's going to save lives. But as he looked into it, he realized, one, that the human embryonic stem cell research is not going to help save lives. And two, it is just morally reprehensible. And it didn't take Obama much time at all to reverse that decision and force taxpayers to pay for
in a bankrupt country is in debt to China.
Right.
We're paying billions out for embryonic stem cells that have not proven one
anything.
Single cure. It's a payback to those organizations that support his concept of, I guess we could call it anti-life
and
concept.
And some of the things that really, like, blow my mind are the types of things that, you know, you constantly hear liberals saying that, oh, in a public school, you know, children shouldn't have to be forced to say God. You know, they shouldn't be forced to celebrate Christmas and sing Christmas carols and all these other things that, you know, have been a tradition in the country for, you know, since its inception. And yet he has no problem with forcing doctors who have a conscience to, you know, give out birth control pills, do abortions, force them to, you know, give out the morning after pill, and totally go against their conscience because it's what his supporters want.
Yes, he's making sure that he'll get reelected with as much support that he has on the left, if you want to use the term the cultural left. And he's paying them back, he's giving them positions, he's giving them a livelihood, and he's giving them a platform.
Mm-hmm.
He's giving them he's going to implement policies that are going to eventually, gradually try to strangle the pro-life movement. I mean, that's the reason why he's in those policy positions.
Yeah.
That's why he's put them there, because they're already completely convinced. They don't have to be convinced of his policies. They believe in those policies.
Even back in the early stages of his administration, it was the woman that she was, I don't know if she was attorney general or not, but they had pulled out a report saying that, listing pro-lifers as terrorists, as domestic terrorists. And you can see that Eric Holder has taken that, and he has prosecuted pro-lifers that have, you know, been peacefully praying and demonstrating outside of abortion clinics. I know of at least three instances where he's, you know, put the full force of the law behind prosecuting these people.
He attempted to do that, but it was stopped.
Well, yeah, because there was at least one or two judges that said, you know, you're out of your mind. You can't do this.
But had he not been stopped, he would have implemented it. That would have been.
That's the scary thing. And there's so many things going on that, you know, we should be really worried about. I mean, how about protecting our borders, you know? How about not letting guns get to drug dealers that then come and shoot our border agents? You know, these are things that we would hope our attorney general would be mm-hmm. focusing on, not like 70-year-old men who are standing outside an abortion clinic praying.
I think that the scope of his anti-life platform, and that's really what it is, is so sweeping that it's breathtaking as you read it. It's almost as though it's not true. You know, but when you put it all together and you see the chronology and the time and the implement, how he's implemented one right after another, as though there is certainly there's a pattern to it, which tells you that what his overall goal is to totally eliminate the very concept in our culture of being pro-life. In other words, he's going to break us.
Yeah.
He's going to make us believe that abortion is okay. He's going to put it in every single element of our society, whether it's school-based clinics, if it's nursing agencies, or now, as in California, they want to have nurses do abortions. Mm-hmm. They want to make it ingrained in society that abortion is acceptable. The morning after pill is acceptable.
RU486.
All acceptable. And it's almost as though he wants to wipe out the very culture of being pro-life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the church.
The last
vestige of some, you know, organized, I guess what you say, outspoken opponents of abortion are
staunch
supporters. Yeah, so now they're going to gag them,
mm-hmm.
trying to gag them. And it is true that once you sample whatever it is, whether it was in Nazi Germany or in socialist countries or in Italy, once you have to do something, your conscience becomes less and less.
Mm-hmm.
And desensitizing the people so that they will eventually accept the culture of abortion.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and I can see that, you know, abortion as the economy tanks, you can see that, you know, women are turning to abortion more and more. Because they just can't afford. I mean, we're seeing a lot of women who we didn't see in the past, like women who already have children. You know, they have 3 children and they just know that they can't support another one. So we're seeing more and more women who already have children seeking abortions, where in the past it was almost like, you know, if you've already had a kid, you understand the sanctity of life. You understand that beauty and that you would never think of killing one of your children. But in this economy, you know, with the culture of being more accepting and with the economy tanking, you can mm-hmm. just see it more and more. It's really a sad state.
That's a separate issue. I've always wondered how a woman who's had 3 children and knows what a child looks like in utero as he grows.
And feels that
an ultrasound isn't going to impact her. The only thing that's going to impact her is a good plan and a good strategy for her finances,
mm-hmm.
so she can find a way to have this baby.
Right.
And that's where the pro-life people...
Yeah.
come in, and we really need to come forward with having pregnancy crisis centers that really offer that type of support, so that having to pay out $50 a month for diapers,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, that they have, maybe, you know, perhaps their budget can only go $30 a month, and that the pregnancy crisis centers pick up the other amount of the cost of the diapers and the other things, the wipes, the shampoos, all these things. That's where, as pro-life people, we really have a responsibility to come through for them.
Oh, absolutely. And I think in this day and age, when you feel so many of the pro-life advances slipping away now on the national level, it's really gratifying to do something, get out there, you know, pray in front of the abortion clinic, volunteer at the Crisis Pregnancy Center, have a shower at your church to raise, you know, money for diapers, or, you know, just have people, you know, bring the diapers to church and then take it to a crisis pregnancy center, because, you know, we really, really need them, and we really do give them to women on a regular basis. And
at least for emergencies,
yeah.
so that they don't feel that great stress that when their
right.
finances go down, that
they
don't
know
have
they have
to.
A place to go.
No, I don't think anything is panicky is a woman who has the last diaper.
Right, right.
And they can't change their baby and they're worried about
right.
that baby.
And they know they're not going to get their check for another couple of days, and they just need a pack of diapers to help them out.
Yeah.
Get through the...
I know no one else appreciates that except a mother who has that happening to them.
Because, of course, as soon as you change one diaper, that all of a sudden that's when they have to go again. but I think... As I'm reading through these things and I'm thinking about viewers that might think that a president really doesn't have an impact, they really do. I mean, And you can see that he's totally determined to push the pro-death agenda, because he's appointed, everywhere he has the opportunity, a pro-abortion person. And not just a pro-abortion. We got the euthanasia, the guy who helped kill Terry Schiavo. He was brought into the White House inner circle. You know, I mean, so where are we going to stop? I mean, if he gets reelected, I mean, right now he's being held back because he wants to be reelected, and he knows that, you know, basically the United States is pro-life. Well, so if he gets reelected, all hell is going to break loose.
According to the Pew Institute, it says that we're 51% pro-life and 49% not pro-life. According to the Gallup poll, they kind of put us 50-50 or more, a little bit more pro-choice, not pro-choice in the sense that they're pro-choice, but that they're not quite as opposed to certain policies. So it sort of fluctuates between 3 or 4%. But for the first time, pro-life people are coming back, and we can only gain. We cannot lose. But when you have a president that pushes policies, he, after a while, I mean, who can go against major policy changes? I mean, right now the Catholic Church is suing, right, and several other organizations are suing. And they'll have to be suit after suit, yeah, after suit.
And you know that takes money.
It takes lots of money.
And so our money is going, you know, to help the churches battle these unjust laws, and our tax dollars are going to defend the unjust laws. So we're getting hit on both ends, you know, and the whole thing is that if he just wouldn't pass these unjust policies.
Well, he's going to. This is what he, it appears to me, as though this is his social position. As we are social conservatives, as they call us, which I don't, you know, necessarily like that type of title, but what do we call him then?
Yeah,
he's socially anti-life.
Yeah,
he really is an agenda. He really lives for that. When you look at the breathtaking number of laws that were affected by his presidency, he will go down in history as the most pro-abortion president that we've ever seen in our country. Mm-hmm. And we're, of course, you'd have to go to lifenews.com to see that. In fact, so many things have been happening that we don't see in the main media.
Right.
All these lawsuits, none of them, you don't see that on Google.
Right.
You see, you know, who dropped 20 pounds in Hollywood, or who has the latest diet, or, you know, whatever from Hollywood. But we're not seeing about the lawsuits that are going in. You have to go to specialized sites like lifenews.com or LifeSite in order to find out what's really going on in pro-life. And even the issue of all these states that are trying to pass these laws, occasionally you get one news release out of a state that hits the main media. But for the most part, you have to go on Life News to find out.
And really,
happening.
The only time they really give any information about the advances that the pro-lifers are making in various states is when NARAL and Planned Parenthood are complaining. So they'll go cover them, you know, and cover their complaints about some of these pro-life bills.
So where does it stand now with the lawsuit? Did we have anything on that? I think
which lawsuit?
The one with the Human Services,
the Health and Human Services.
Health and Human Services.
So there's several organizations that I know of that are taking the lawsuit to court. I know EWTN is.
I didn't know that.
Catholic bishops are. Priests for Life is. And so one of the, you know, some of the things is, you know.
There's a university as well, aren't
there? Oh, yeah. There's several universities that are too. And the reason being is that a lot of these organizations are self-insured. So when Obama says that, well, it's just your insurance company that's going to have to cover the cost of the birth control and sterilization, et cetera, they're saying, well,
They're
we are the insurance companies, you know. We are the ones that are insuring, you know, our workers.
He probably didn't even know that.
I know.
He probably didn't.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of times you can see how it was set up with all the people that he's put in his inner circle, especially on Health and Human Services with Kathleen Sebelius and some of these other Planned Parenthood people. Because basically, it's really a good thing for Planned Parenthood that all these insurance companies are going to be paying for the health for the birth control and all these other devices and stuff. Because even though you can get the birth control for very cheap at Walmart or Walgreens or some of these other Target, Planned Parenthood will obviously be pushing to have the girls come to them, and they will double, triple charge the government and the health insurance companies. So
more
they'll
than
be getting
double,
lots
triple.
Of money.
More than double, triple.
Yeah, and they're being, right now, they're being looked into in California for triple dipping on, you know, the government covering different services for women in California. They've been defrauding the government, you know, the government of California, which is like broke. Planned Parenthood has been defrauding them. So, I mean, it's really a political payback for a lot of these organizations who have been very vocal in supporting his candidacy.
And then, of course, the money comes back to him.
Oh, sure.
He has $104 million in his little war chest right now, according to the newspaper.
The latest I read was that in October, Medicare, all Medicare recipients have to do their, look at their new enrollment, you know, for all their different plans. And apparently there's Medicare Advantage is subsidized by the government, you know, to a certain level. And come October, because of Obamacare, that subsidy is going away. So a lot of Medicare recipients who are going to get their enrollment plan are going to see that their coverage is going to be lower. They're not going to get as good of coverage from Medicare, and they're going to have to pay more for it. So what he wants to do is raid the Medicare trust fund to cover the cost of this for this year so that the seniors don't see that change due to Obamacare so that he can, you know, garner their votes in November. So basically there's another $8 billion that he's going to be using basically to buy votes this year. It's all very frustrating.
I think that for our viewers who are borderline or who think that he's done no harm, I think they need to look at the record and see. And they can download this at lifenews.com.
Yep.
And you can look at it yourself.
It's President Barack Obama's pro-abortion record, a pro-life compilation at lifenews.com.
Just
11
Google.
Full pages.
So if you had any questions, you can find out for yourself. And this is just the record.
And the tip of the iceberg if he gets reelected.
And anybody who wants to question why they need to vote and why they need to make sure that if they don't want to see a pro-abortion country, that they need and they want to see life preserved and they want to see their own integrity preserved in their health care. We haven't even discussed health care, which is a big topic.
Right.
Because all of this is working to funnel into that Obamacare, which we hope is, of course, ruled unconstitutional. But it's all meant to go into the structure of health care.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would be a country who says that they're 50% pro-life, and people are saying they're 50% pro-choice, or they're not saying that they're totally pro-choice, but they're saying that about 17% are sort of iffy.
Right.
So you're going to be forcing the other half of the country to go into a total anti-life culture if we continue with this president, because he has plans for us.
Mm-hmm.
for this. He's really backed off of a lot of his more aggressive policies, and he's held back. And the next phase, the next sweeping phase, will be when he is reelected. Right. So everyone needs to really pause. If it's not their pocketbook they're concerned about, that should be enough to make them concerned. But, the anti-life policies that he's implemented are so sweeping that no one can deny that.
Yeah.
And anybody who would, let's say, defend him needs to just download the 11 pages of policy.
I mean, really, it's not your pocketbook that I'd be so concerned about. It's really your soul.
Well, for us,
and the soul of our country,
For us, it is. But some people, some people look at issues differently.
Yeah.
If people are broke too.
Yeah.
I mean, jobless and broke. So, there's a lot of good reasons. But if that's not reason enough, then we're not making any endorsements because we don't endorse. We're just making people aware of the record.
Yeah.
And of course, we have the prospective nominee. The prospective nominee, Mitt Romney, has been attacked by Norrell. That's the other part that we hadn't discussed.
But what we're going to do right now is we're going to open the phone lines for your comments and questions. Our phone number here is 860-456-3000. We'd love to hear from you. It's 860-456-3000. So you were mentioning that the probable nominee for the Republican candidate for president is Mitt Romney, and he's currently being attacked by some of Obama's closest, biggest supporters, NARAL, which is the National Abortion Rights Action League, and Planned Parenthood, who are afraid that if he is elected, they will lose their funding. Because one of the things that we really need to do is to get our financial house in order is to cut a lot of the things that we don't need. And do we really need to be funding Planned Parenthood to a third of their profits? A nonprofit organization that makes a profit every year and has a billion-dollar business, so we're giving them at least $350 million a year, and so that would be one little chunk of change that we could hold back.
I think that Norrell also attacked him on the fact that just by the fact that a Republican could take Obama's position. They're so fearful that 17 states have pending legislation or have passed it. It'd probably be challenged in the courts, but at this point, they're going in a pro-life direction to stop the open abortion policy.
Right.
I mean, they're probably not going to 100% stop the abortions, but they're limiting it by they're putting so many qualifications onto it that it's limiting it, and they're
so fearful. But you're trying to make them safer for women.
Absolutely, because a woman just died last week.
Yeah.
From an RU486 abortion. Was it in New Jersey?
Yes.
It was in New Jersey.
And I know a woman was rushed from the Planned Parenthood across the street from us a couple weeks ago by ambulance. So, these safe and safe abortions aren't as safe as they claim. And they don't want to do anything that would help to make them safer.
No, they actually are lessening the qualifications for the person who does the abortion, plus the video abortion.
Right.
That where they're not even there.
Right.
And what are they calling that? They're calling that, there's a special name for it, video connection, where the doctor just sort of calls in on a video phone.
I can't remember. It's a remote abortion. And basically, RU486 is a, I know we've talked about this before, but it's a two-pill system where they take the first pill that basically starves the baby. And then they have to take a second prostaglandin to cause the woman to, contract and expel the dead baby. And there's a lot of risk to this because we had a girl that came in to problem pregnancy, she said she would never do that again. She bled for 6 months.
Mm, I believe that.
And if the woman does not expel the entire, you know, the placenta, everything along with, you know, next couple of weeks, the tissue can become necrotic and she can get an infection. That's usually what a woman dies from using RU-46. When they first developed this cocktail in France, they had very strict rules that the woman had to come in for an examination. She couldn't take the first pill until 24 hours later, so she had time to think about it. She had to take it in the hospital. Then she was stayed there for a little bit. She could go home for a couple of days. Then she came in for the prostaglandin. She had to stay there until she expelled the baby. When they fast-tracked it in the United States, you know, Planned Parenthood said, "Oh yeah, we're going to do all that. We're going to do all that. You know, we're going to make sure that, you know, all those safety precautions are taken care of." But they don't do. They just gave that lip service. I mean, they're supposed to do an ultrasound to date the baby. In France, they said that they would only go 7 to 8 weeks at most. Planned Parenthood pushes it 9. You know, maybe 10 weeks. And that is that increases the risk to the woman, and it also increases the chance that the abortion isn't going to be successful. And of course, when the woman comes in for the RU-46, she has to sign a waiver in Planned Parenthood saying that if she doesn't successfully abort with RU-46, she has to come back for a surgical abortion. So ching ching, that's $1,200 right there. $600 for the first one, $600 for the second one. So they're really not doing anything. And like you said, they want to do these remote abortions where the doctor doesn't even examine the woman. She just, like, talks to her over. Basically, they'd have a whole room of women, and the doctor would be on a telehookup. Right. Yeah. A video. And talk to the women, and they'd just have somebody in the office dispense the pills and send them on their way.
That's incredible, really, when you think about that type of a society. They also want to have, in California, they
right.
want just nurses to be able to do abortions. That's almost like the old back street of alley abortion, you know.
I know. Returning.
I'm not saying that nurses aren't competent, you know, to do procedures, but that type of procedure that can go wrong,
right?
Do you really want that? Without having that extended medical knowledge to take the immediate action that's necessary.
And they're feeling that they're forced to be doing this because there's less, few and fewer doctors who really want to put themselves in the situation of killing children on a regular basis. They can't recruit the doctors. So they're trying to get, you know, less qualified people to do the procedures.
And in speaking of that, can we bring in the issue about Abby Johnson? She's, of course, and you can explain who she is, Abby Johnson.
Okay, so Abby Johnson was a director of Planned Parenthood in Texas. Through prayers of people, pro-life people outside the clinic, and the fact that she saw a video an ultrasound-guided abortion. And so she saw the child struggling to get away from the vacuum, and she, you know, saw the baby being ripped apart. She realized that what they were doing was killing children. And so she has become not just, not only did she quit Planned Parenthood and, you know, divorce herself from that lifestyle, but she is adamantly pro-life, and now she's basically a whistleblower for Planned Parenthood. So what is she doing now?
Well, she had an abortion. I think she had more than one, though, didn't she?
She had three.
She just came out with her story and said that the woman who counseled her, this is how flimsy the counseling is, that the type of counseling that was done was, "I've had 9 abortions and I'm okay." And that the woman who was counseling her had that many abortions. Most people find it breathtaking to think 9 abortions for any person, but the number of abortions by some women, especially if they're in the abortion industry, is a staggering number.
Yeah.
And in this case, So that's the story that she's just put out. That's no type of counseling. You know, you don't have a person who's objective. You don't have a person who's going to give you any in-depth understanding of what an abortion is.
It's like misery loves company.
That's true. And that there's a lot to be said in that in some circumstances. And that's what she's pointing out, is that she didn't feel she was getting the counseling that she should have, so that she would have made a different decision, which she now, of course, regrets.
I found, you know, talking with women that have been in and out of Planned Parenthood, that they do not, I mean, it's more like a mill, you know, like, you know, get them in, get them out, you know, and they don't take the time to counsel women, you know, because it's a huge decision, and they understand that it's a huge decision. But they don't really help the women weigh their options and just talk about it, because once they have the abortion, there's no going back, you know, and it really should be something. I know that they've tried to pass laws where a woman has to be counseled and then she wouldn't be able to receive the abortion for 24 hours. Well, you know, the pro-abortionists go crazy because, you know, they might lose some business because one or two women might, you know, think about what they're doing and not have the abortion. And it's if you're really pro-choice, which I'm totally convinced after hearing a lot of things about Planned Parenthood, you really want the women to have all the information and make an informed decision. And they're just not giving the women that option.
But sometimes it does happen, and you did say that you're starting to see a different trend, even in your area. You know, I'm not saying that they've changed, but there are people who are starting to.
I think there are women, individual women like Abby Johnson. We have a woman by us who was also working at Planned Parenthood for 6 years, and she left. I think from the prayers of people outside the clinics, that I can't overstress how important they are, because we feel that there is some movement in the Planned Parenthood by us where there are women being counseled against having abortions. We had one woman come out and tell us that one of the clinic workers told her that she didn't feel she was ready to have an abortion. And that's amazing. That's really, truly amazing. We had another woman come out saying that one of the clinic workers told her to come to us.
I know.
Across the street. And I don't divulge everything, because I don't want this person to get in trouble. I want her to stay at Planned Parenthood and do the good that she's doing as far as helping, you know, women get out of it.
But I think that the pro-life movement is finally reaching the pro-abortion movement and going right into their hearts, and the people are starting to change. I'm not saying it's a mass exodus,
right,
but there's
significant numbers of people leaving the abortion industry, and the people at 40 Days for Life have documented, you know, there's hundreds of people who have left, and there's dozens of clinics that have actually closed. Because some of their key personnel have left and they can't continue, so it's huge. I mean, I think the pro-lifers are making huge inroads, and not necessarily through legislation, but you know, we do need our politicians to, you know, not undermine us and be on our side.
Well, if the policies in Washington are anti-life,
right,
and the culture is changing, then there's going to be
a clash. Yeah.
And that's what's happening actually right now. This election is going to be the clash. And hopefully every person.
We have a call from Peter in Wyndham. Oh, Brian.
Good evening.
Hello, Brian.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you doing?
Okay. That thing about the Army chaplains not being allowed to make the statement that that they wanted to make concerning the mandate.
Yeah.
Just, I have some good news for you. I met a bishop, a retired bishop, who was a former chaplain, and he said the man who's the head of the chaplaincy,
right,
He took that to court and won.
Wow.
So they wound up being allowed to say what they said after all. So that's good. And you know, this stuff about people in the military can't question the president. I think they can question the president when it comes to things like that.
Sure, sure.
You know, actual military decisions maybe not, but
right.
things like that, obviously that's something different.
I'm really glad you brought that up and gave us that information. Because I did want to go back to that. It's incredible to think that, you know, the chaplains in the serving our country are told by their bishops that mm-hmm. they need to preach against this attack on religious liberty, which is something yeah. that our army is fighting for, you know, to protect our
yeah,
rights.
That's right.
And they're being told that they can't, they're being gagged. And
yeah.
and that's, I mean, so their freedom of speech, their freedom of, you know, religious expression is totally being undermined. And you're right. In one respect, they do have to obey their commander-in-chief, but only when it comes to issues of, you know, military or military secrets or, you know, defending the country or anything to do with that. But when it comes to their individual rights, if they don't have individual rights, none of us do, because they're the ones fighting for us.
That's right. And, the woman who called us terrorists was Janet Napolitano, by the way.
Thank you.
And, it's funny because the Coast Guard is under her.
Oh.
And if my life had gone differently, there's a possibility I could have become a Coast Guard officer. And I guess I would have been in trouble because I probably wouldn't have held back.
Yeah, you probably would have been put on the,
yeah.
the watch list.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to give you that information, and I know you found it helpful. And
well, thanks for listening, and thanks for astutely coming up with that information
sure.
for us.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, that always that blew my mind. I couldn't believe that, you know, they're being torn between listening to their bishops and listening to the military leaders.
Someone had to make that decision, though. Who made that decision to try to gag the military chaplains? Somebody issued an order.
Yeah. Well, it all, you know, the buck stops here. Yeah, that is amazing.
Especially when it's in the Constitution.
I know.
Right
I know.
To freedom. Religious
know.
Freedom.
And right to free speech.
We have another show coming up after this month that will be aired, and that will be about religious freedoms again. And there'll be somebody else that aren't talking about that more extensively about that. But we didn't touch on that on the show. But
that's a whole another that's huge issue.
Another. War front,
right.
if you want to say.
Right.
It is a battle.
Right.
It's a battle.
I mean, so all the things that we've been talking about over the years, you know, the human embryonic stem cell research, you know, contraception, abortion, obviously, euthanasia, all these things are being attacked by this one administration. You know?
One leader who's leading an administration.
Yeah.
Yeah. One man.
So,
I mean, there's many people behind him who think
right.
the same way.
But he's the one who's choosing them
yes.
to, you know, bring them into the fold.
Yes.
You know, that's one thing. Another thing that I heard on the radio the other day was that some people said, and I remember this when I was in high school. People were saying, "Oh, Ronald Reagan. He's an actor. He's you know he went to Peoria University. He's just stupid." But people that I knew said, "You know what? He might not be the smartest man, but he's going to surround himself by very intelligent people, and that's what's going to make the difference." I heard the other day that Obama specifically chooses people who aren't as smart as him because he likes to feel like he's the most intelligent in the room. So that is not a good leader. Right there, that is not a good leader. Because, I mean, you would think you'd want the best people, you know, leading your team and doing what's best for the country.
I just hope that every person who's viewing this show goes over in their mind the list and goes to lifenews.com and downloads this awesome record to see it in print and to keep it before election as to when they make their judgment. If you're, if you care about life, if you even care about your own family members, your own life, you should be concerned about these policies that are being passed. And, you know, we have not expanded on to health, the health care issue. We've, of course, this show, on this show, we've been opposed to Obamacare before Obamacare was in existence because we were talking about suskinets in the state of Connecticut. And we became very well-versed on the health care issues. The whole issue. And we don't. And I'm fairly sure you share this point of view, is we're not opposed to health care.
No.
We're not. We believe in government inserting themselves when it's necessary to provide good health care. But government-controlled health care that begins to ration and control the outcome is a danger to good health care.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we were expressing our concern before. There are forms of health care that the government does involve themselves in that are not against the patient. They're not against the rights of individuals. And so, but in Obamacare, the direction in which his policies will go will be anti-life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now everyone knows it, but we talked about
and
this 5 years ago.
And we're not talking about just abortion.
No, we're talking about all across the spectrum.
Right. Right.
In the issue of things like having kidney transplants and heart transplants, they've already begun to question why someone who waited on a 5-year waiting list, such as Dick Cheney, for a heart transplant, should he have had it because he's an older person? Well, that means that you're going to start to discern as to who you'll give those transplants to, whether they're kidney transplants. They already have guidelines that are in place that are pretty much outrule a fairly old person from getting a transplant. But that's not enough. They want these new guidelines. And that would be another concern. All these, the extended care that we have for people who are dying could be cut and they would die sooner.
Yeah.
So rationing is a big consideration.
Well, and it's not just that. I mean, whenever the government gets involved in anything, they automatically put way more layers of bureaucracy, and all the layers of bureaucracy cost way more money. So the money is not going to be going towards the healthcare per se, but the, you know, administering the healthcare and the insurance policies and all that other crap. I mean, they're already talking about hiring all these IRS agents to make sure that you buy your health insurance, and that skirt the system. And so they're going to have to somehow cut costs. And like, are they going to go to like the Oregon plan where in Oregon they have a physician assisted suicide, and a cancer patient will more likely be given an overdose of morphine than cancer treatment because it's cheaper?
You know, if you said that 6 years ago, I'd say
you're crazy.
Yeah,
but it's true. It's happening.
Yes,
it's totally happening.
And it could, and whatever they could think they will do.
Yeah.
I mean, one time you thought, oh, that's not rational people. They're not going to go there. But you just said it. Oregon, the state of Oregon, promotes it in that way.
Yeah.
And they're the only state that has done that.
But you've got to watch, because Massachusetts is heading towards physician-assisted suicide, and they are touting this. They're going to have it on they're trying to get it on the referendum in November. And they're touting it as, like, only, rational people, only people who, are rational can, make these decisions, to end their lives. And, so people are like, oh, well, people want to die with dignity, bull crap and all that stuff. But there's a law in the books in Massachusetts, and it's the only state in the union that actually says anybody who is incompetent has the same exact rights as somebody who is competent. And so they're trying to use that to then, as soon as the bill is, ink is dried, they'll say that, oh, well, incompetent people can also be, get the right to die. And you know how that's going to go. You know, people who only people that the only person that's got to be in the room is the person who's going to inherit the your wealth and the doctor that's signed off on it.
I just, it's always puzzled me about Massachusetts people. They're so Catholic. And yet, why is this legislation gaining any momentum? And of course, it's 85%.
Well, even the doctors against it. The doctors are all against it.
Well, who's for it that's pushing it?
Well, it's a very, very liberal state. A lot of...
But I mean, somebody had to propose the
Hemlock
bill.
Society.
Okay.
Yeah. So they handpicked Massachusetts for this.
They always do.
Yeah. And because, of course, as soon as this happens in Massachusetts, you know, just like Roe versus Wade, it's going to go to the Supreme Court and it'll be law of the land. And with Obamacare and rationing, it's like... That's a good way to, you know, shore up Medicare and Social Security all in one fell swoop. I mean, we laugh about it, but I mean that.
No, I'm not laughing. It's just like it's painful. It's very painful. If you don't laugh, it's too painful.
I know.
To imagine, because whatever they can think, they will do.
I know.
There's no limits.
And it's going to be, you know, we're talking about fairness now and the tax liability and stuff. It's not. It's What's fair? Is it fair to rip a child out of a mother's womb? Is it fair to, you know, kill an elderly patient or somebody who's, you know, paralyzed or a burden to somebody? Is that fair? It's not.
Are we going to end on a good note?
What have you got? What do you got?
I don't know. The woman who had come into our pregnancy crisis center came back today to get her crib for her baby, and she was a save as well, you know. And so we have to celebrate that. And I understand you had one.
We've had several saves in the last couple of weeks. I mean, it's been amazing. And I had another save that came in today for her ultrasound. And we were on pins and needles hoping that she would come back. But she had come out of Planned Parenthood because a Catholic woman spoke with her before she went in. And her brother just happened to be with her, and her brother, you know, was very supportive. He was more excited about the ultrasound than she was.
See, that's the good note. That's what we do what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a good high lately. And it's all because, you know, people are willing to step out and help the crisis pregnancy centers, get out there and pray on the streets. And we're praying for all of the people in the abortion industry.
And keep those material things coming to help those moms.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for joining us today. We hope you go to lifenews.com. Download the list of all of the actions that President Obama has taken over the last 3 years. And see just where he wants to take the country. And if you think it's bad now, it's only going to get worse once he, if he's reelected. And we hope that doesn't happen.
No.
For our sake. And when you look in the mirror the next time, realize yours too is the face of pro-life. Please join us again next time.